Deezy Yuppie Special Features.
So, good morning. Thank you for taking the time to attend our conference at the Department of Arts and Communication. It's the Lost and the Retrieved, Built Cultural Heritage Against Conflict. So this has been organized by the Philippine Arts Program, specifically under the guidance of Dr. Hami Libertina Chanzar Labor, our Associate Professor of Philippine Arts. Incidentally, she'll be the one to deliver the opening remarks, so here she is.
So lives have been lost due to the armed conflict in Marawi and in other parts of the world. Alongside the tragedy of these fatalities is a destruction of built cultural heritage, which documents the soul of the people, their beliefs, their art tradition, and the best of what they are capable of producing. Even long after they are gone, some of these works are now forever lost due to conflict, while some have been retrieved, restored, or reconstructed. With this in mind, the faculty of the Philippine Arts Program, Cultural Heritage and Art Management Tracts of the University of the Philippines, Manila, through its Power Up project, has organized a conference on the Lost and the Retrieved, Built Cultural Heritage and Its Conflict. So a little about Project Power Up. So it's an awareness campaign that aims to position Padre Paula Street in Ermita, Manila as a heritage site. The Power Project aims to magnify long overlooked issues across fields through week-long events held along the street that this campaign champions. Alright, next slide. Okay, so rationale for the project, brief. So Padre Paula Street, where the venue of our conference is right now, is at the very heart of Ermita. So Ermita is a district of Manila founded in the late 16th century. Its name was taken from La Ermita, the Spanish word for hermitage. Since an hermitage housing with an image of the Nuestra Señora de Guía used to stand here. So the hermitage is no longer on site, but in place of it we see the church of the Nuestra Señora de Guía. Just a block away from Ross Boulevard. Okay. So this is the Ermita Church, yes, otherwise known as the Ermita Church, and with the image of the Nuestra Señora de Guía. So Ermita gained renewed prominence during the American colonial period, as planned by the Americans and with the cooperation of Filipinos, Ermita became the site of a civic center, extending from the Pasig River to Manila Bay. Here would rise government buildings, the City Hall of Manila, and the offices of the three branches of government, the executive, legislative, and judicial. Here too would arise the first state-run educational institution and the country's foremost school, the University of the Philippines, and alongside it, the Philippine General Hospital. A large park was laid out around the monument with the national hero, Dr. Jose Rizal, as its core. The dream was that Ermita itself would be the core of the emerging nation-state. Though destroyed by the bitter fighting of 1945, much of the civic center has been restored, but no longer to its original dignity. After the war, Ermita attempted to stand anew. Quoting Jalcita, Ermita continued to have pleasant middle-income neighborhoods alongside the imposing newly restored government buildings. Moreover, its art galleries, bookshops, familiar, and coffee shops encourage the intellectuals and artists to try new untrodden paths. But as happened in the rest of the city, one by one, the old Ermita families left for the suburbs. After all, the city had no plan for making the district walkable and ultimately livable. It stood by as floods worsened. So as floods worsened, as the craters in the sidewalks widened, and as the jitneys took over the street as terminal, spewing smoke as they waited in line. So this neglect and slow exodus have problematized the preservation of memory of place, of the glory that was once Calle Faura, and eventually its valuation. made evident in the apparent sense of neglect or lack of support from local government. So street vendors abound, frequent absence of police visibility, etc. And yes. So for this reason, the Faura project was conceived to bring back the glory that was once Calle Faura, to give Padre Faura Street a platform and a voice, to make use of its voice to support current problems and its community experience. So for 5 years now, the Philippine Arts Program of the University of the Philippines, Manila, through some members of its faculty and students, had made a number of endeavors, mostly outside an enclosed museum context, to use particular spaces in Ermita, particularly Padre Faura Street, as a living museum, with heritage buildings and streets as artifacts. It aims to recreate historical settings stimulating pastime periods and providing visitors with an experiential interpretation of history. It also aims to conduct appropriate and ethically responsible museological approaches, as well as increased focus on the relationship between cultural and human rights. So that's basically just to present a brief of the of why the Project Faura was conceived. So I just end with this showing you what we have at the one end of the eastern end of the Faura and its opposite end, which where we have the view of the sunset of Manila Bay. So with this, I end. So welcome once again, and good morning.
Halika na makinig sa DZUP 60.2.
Pagyamanin ang kaalaman tungkol sa iyong kalusugan at maging handa laban sa anumang karamdaman dahil ang kalusugan mo ay mahalaga. Your health matters. Tuwing Martes, alas 4 hanggang alas 5 ng hapon, Health Matters. Dito lang sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka.
Kaya kong unahin gumawa ng homework kahit gustong-gusto ko nang maglaro ng computer games.
Kaya kong manatili sa iisang lane at sumunod sa traffic light kahit nagmamadali ako.
Kaya kong tumawid sa tamang tawiran kahit gaano pa kataas ang aakyatin kong footbridge.
Kaya kong regular na magbayad ng buwis kahit napakaliit ng sahod ko.
Maliliit na mga bagay pero malaki ang may tutulong sa pag-unlad ng bansa. Ikaw, anong kaya mong gawin para sa Pilipinas?
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
Honest ka ba?
Miss, nahulog cellphone mo.
Manong, labis po ang sukli nyo.
Naku ma'am, bawal po ang lagay. Ito po ang ticket nyo.
Honesty is still the best policy. Eh ikaw, tapat ka ba?
Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka.
DZUP Special Features.
Dr. Lico is full professor at the UP Diliman College of Architecture, and his CV is too long to read, so I'll just give the excerpts. So he has, his degrees are in BS Architecture and in Art History and Philippine Studies, all of which come from UP Diliman. He's project director of the Metropolitan Theater and head of the studio lab on history, theory, and criticism. So, I'd like to turn over the floor to Dr. Lico.
Good morning. So, before we start, let us recall what happened during the Second World War. So, we have lost a lot of heritage structures during the war, especially in security, but it was reconstructed. So there are other buildings, for example. One of my projects is the Intendencia. So the Intendencia was devastated during the Pacific War. So it was totally devastated during the war, and there are attempts now to revive this building immediately in the post-war period as a form of recuperation. So today it stands in one of the ruins of Intramuros, but there is a room to revive the building, to reuse it again, because buildings are not static nor timeless. They have to move on in another form. So I was called on to head a project to restore the Intendencia, not as a customs house, but rather a national archives. So this is the building. So when we do restoration, and we need to be historically accurate and rely on archival research. But this is the model. So pinakita ko lang ito kasi I want to see how we can recover buildings from war, from conflict. So the following slides presents the devastation that was wrought by the Second World War. So this is the post office building. So many of these buildings have been restored, but not fully restored in their aesthetic, original aesthetic form. But they were an approximation of what was there of their style. The Supreme Court, UP, Pier Number 7, City Hall. So some of them are totally devastated, some of them are beyond repair. Some were never reconstructed. So I will go now to my paper, even the Metropolitan Theater, which I'm working on. So the recent Marawi siege have created a problem in terms of reconstruction. Societies have long sought to protect and preserve their cultural heritage for reasons ranging from education to historical research, to the desire to reinforce a sense of identity. In times of war and conflict, cultural identity and cultural heritage become all the more important. Conflict is often presented as an event that interrupts and disrupts normality. Buildings, monuments, and symbols of culture that speaks of a shared root acquire an increased significance. Accordingly, they become targets of violent and oppressive action by enemies that seek to destroy the symbols of the symbols. Or the iconography associated with alternative faith and institutions. Conflict and violence can touch cities, space, and architecture. Issues of destruction, confiscation, the imposition of design planning, making areas or buildings inaccessible, among others. In effect, built heritage is frequently damaged or destroyed during periods of war and violence. Sites of cultural heritage, from churches, mosques, bridges, and memorials to entire landscapes and villages, have through the centuries suffered accidental destruction or have been deliberately the target of civil wars, ethnic conflict, or world wars. In retrospect, countless icons of our shared cultural heritage were damaged, looted, or destroyed during the armed conflict, as we witnessed in the aftermath of the Pacific War. In response to this destruction of heritage after the war, nations of the world gathered in the Netherlands to draft the 1954 Hague Convention for the Protection of Cultural Property in the event of armed conflict, in an attempt to ensure that losses of cultural heritage during war would never occur. However, recent conflict in Marawi, Bosnia, Afghanistan, and Iraq demonstrate that cultural heritage remains vulnerable during armed conflict. In recent years, in Sarajevo, the picture you're seeing now, the National Library was burned and the facade of the National Museum of Bosnia Herzegovina in 1992 was pockmarked by snipers. In Afghanistan, objects in the Kabul Museum were defaced, destroyed, or looted, and sold abroad. At the Great Buddha of Bamiyan was obliterated by the Taliban in 2001. What we are seeing now is an attempt not to restore the defaced statue, no, by means of projection and three-dimensional projection. Much of the current damage in Iraq and Syria has been choreographed by the ISIS. ISIS had siege control of the Greco-Roman city of Palmyra, which lies on the strategic east-west route in the war of Syria. So that's Palmyra. So a video posted on April 11, 2015 shows the fate of Nero, a city in ancient Assyria 3,000 years ago. An exceptional and irreplaceable cultural achievement was replaced and thrown down. The leveling of buildings and cities has always been an inevitable part of conducting hostilities, and this has worsened as weaponry become heavier and more destructive. Both sides in war and conflict are responsible for the destruction of countless historic buildings, monuments, and cultural heritage sites during military operations. This damage may be the direct result of military maneuvers to gain territory or root out a foe or a desire to wipe out the enemy's capacity to fight. More often, sites that are most valuable to the community are used as protective shield by the enemy on the assumption that this area will be spared from bombardment. This happened during the Second World War in the Battle of Manila when Intramuros became an arena of war during the siege. And the same thing happened during the siege of Marawi, where the Mabuti used the mosque as a stronghold. As the Tagalog war dissipated in Manila and Marawi, we see their Greek heritage as heavily hit. Post-war Marawi in fact is many of the issues related to architecture of conflict, occupation and division of land and city, checkpoints, blockades, walls, settlements, destruction of historical and patrimonial buildings, eviction from homes, creation of forts and enemies areas, rewriting of history, symbolic violence, and the humiliation by the use of space, control and harassment, and the terror through infrastructure. The annihilation of heritage is not always an accident, or an accidental byproduct, or a collateral damage. In some cases, sites of cultural heritage have been deliberately targeted as a means of inflicting pain and social trauma. A community's shared sense of belonging is often rooted in these heritage sites and landscape, giving such places particular social significance. Here, architecture takes on a defending quality. A mosque, for example, is not simply a mosque. It represents to its enemies the presence of a community marked for erasure. A library or art gallery is a cache of historical memory, evidence that a given community's present extends into the past and legitimizing it in the present or into the future. In these circumstances, structures and places with certain meanings are selected for the medium with deliberate intent. This is not collateral damage. This is the active and often systematic destruction of particular building typologies or architectural tradition that happens in conflicts, where the erasure of memory, history, and identity attached to architecture and place enforce forgetting is the goal in itself. These buildings are attacked not because they are in the path of the military objective. To their destroyer, they are the principal targets. Cities and its buildings can be the target of violence when spaces are seen as the unwanted or threatening the otherness, and when control of space becomes the instrument of power or oppression. A community's shared sense of belonging is often rooted in heritage sites and landscape, giving such place social significance. The destruction of heritage sites accordingly causes individual and collective loss and affects claims on identity and belonging. The reconstruction in turn are complex, often become the focus for competing emotional, social, and political claims. The impacts of heritage destruction and reconstruction are therefore far-reaching and significant for societal well-being. With sites at place, there is much more that can be done. For example, we should do virtual mapping of the sites to preserve them digitally. So that's Marawi. So sana naman na digitize it before it was destroyed. So such technology and expertise could be used in vulnerable locations to digitally document and produce visual recreation. We also need to be an equal way to preserving the intangible heritage. For one, a way to provide comfort to the refugee of Marawi is to help them cook familiar, evocative, and culturally important dishes, which can expand as a mode of building resilience among them. Archives of photos, field footages, stories, poems, and oral history help those who normally see themselves as victims maintain their cultural identity and pride. Within the matrix of post-conflict scenarios, heritage and identity have been recognized as important factors in the process of reconstruction of heritage sites and psychological recuperation of the people. Reconstructing iconic structures such as the bridge at Mostar in Bosnia or in Dresden, so it has been recognized by the international community as a way of repairing conflict situations. Here we recognize the potential of architecture as an instrument of reconciliation and healing. However, it was found that reconstruction is never just a matter of physical design and resources, but it is also about enabling societies to recreate their own vision of themselves and to reclaim their identities in a post-trauma situation. From Bosnia-Herzegovina, the city of Mostar gave us another example of unity and tolerance. From Mostar citizen, the Mostar Bridge was not just a connector of communities enabling access to jobs and services, but a cultural icon and a foundation of the city's identity. When the bridge was destroyed in 1990 during the Bosnian War, local communities were in shock. They prioritized the bridge over housing in the reconstruction process, indicating its economic, cultural, and infrastructural value. I quote, "A person here is one of us. The bridge is all of us," was the message from the communities that explained the fundamental role of culture as identity in the recovery process. In Mali, the historic city of Timbuktu was severely affected by a protracted conflict, which resulted in 2012 in the demolition of its mausoleum, damage to its manuscript, and multifaceted attempts to erase the city's identity. The reconstruction process mobilized the international community and centered around the people's priorities and needs. It rehabilitated and trained artisans to restore and rebuild historic monuments following ancient practices and using traditional materials. The effort helped promote solidarity across borders, preserve what's left of the city's manuscripts and relics, and restore communities. Communities, facilities, public spaces, and the functioning of the city. Post-disaster reconstruction innovation has also come to a stage, bringing remote sensing, mapping, and 3D imaging technology to enable better identification of problems, as well as more accurate reconstruction of destroyed urban and social fabrics. For example, we can digitally reconstruct monuments in archaeological sites and other heritage assets in danger or in remote inaccessible areas by using the latest technology. It helped preserve 3D image of the monument for rebuilding in a post-disaster and post-conflict situation. With technology transfer and the use of 3D laser scanning, 3D laser scanning technology, we now have the tools to enable monuments and historic structure within conflict zone to be conserved, restored, or one day rebuilt to their former glory. While it is only one step in the extensive process, we believe that digital construction or digital documentation has the potential to address the threat posed to our global heritage by human aggression. We should not forget that when we deal with heritage in an emergency situation, we are not dealing primarily with heritage managers or conservation specialists. We are dealing with the people who are specifically connected to that heritage. So, for us, the challenge is that we should train our army and the police how to deal with heritage artifacts. They require special training because they are the ones who would be salvaging the architectural fragments and keeping them somewhere safe, numbering them and documenting them for later use. So my recommendation is that we train our army to do such tagging and documentation. Think of the failed monuments men. The emergency response to cultural heritage is what leads the way towards recovery. So if we really want to understand how recovery takes place and what challenges are being impacted, we should understand emergency response as well. Beyond monuments, another challenge to face is how to save everyday vernacular buildings that are badly damaged. yung mga ordinary structure, yung everyday buildings na ginagamit ng tao. Salvaging of these buildings is important to the residents. For example, they want some window frames to be safe to reuse them because these are fragments of memory, no? And they can be reused in the reconstruction process because may sentimental value. So, that brings to mind an emphasis in the creation of a community of volunteers, which can be the one who will deal with the people's heritage. So, in a Talanganing level, a core of young community-based volunteer can be trained to conduct cultural mapping, and in times of emergency, they can be deployed to salvage the artifact that is really important to communal memory. Coordination among engineers, community resident, heritage professional, and government agency is also necessary. We also encounter technical issues like shoring of heritage structure, for example, during an earthquake, which requires special joint training with both engineers and local community, so and even craftsmen. So this can be done with NGOs or on a barangay level, the members of which can be trained for a temporary stabilization of structures or applied to the first aid treatment of a structure endangered by an impending conflict situation. Looking beyond the visible, big buildings and heritage structures, the challenge for cultural recovery is to actually rebuild better while retaining tangible and intangible values. The buildings and spaces that carry social values and function are holding the community together. They are the glue, but they are the artifacts of social cohesion. Right now, warriors feel that restoring community spaces will also help their psychological recovery. It's not just about the recovery of the built fabric. It is the psychological recovery of heritage that facilitates the continuity of living tradition. Cultural heritage matters. Without it, there will be no reconciliation in divided places and communities. Without it, there will be no balance between restoring the past and renewing the future. The process of strengthening resilience and building back better can only be successful when it incorporates a people-centered approach, a place-based strategy, and an integrated policy making, all rooted in culture, a place, and its community. So, therefore, we should always refuse to see our heritage used as battlefields. Maraming salamat.
Ito na ang programang kukumpleto sa Webes nyo.
Yun, yun!
Tampok ang mga boses, kwento at talento ng ating mga kawani, reps at mga guro ng bayan.
Yun, yun!
Tara na at pakinsa sa usapan para sa isang pamantasan at bansang masaya, masigla, malaya, makamamamayan at makabayan. Para sa isang tatakbo nyo na usapan, yun yun! Tuwing Huwebes, alauna hanggang alas dos ng hapon, dito lang sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
Isang araw, di pa uwi na nga ako. Pagkabukas ko ng pinto, wala na akong ibang nakita. Hindi ang mga kamay niya na tumatama sa mukha ko. Wala na akong ibang naririnig, kundi ang iyak ng mga anak ko. Wala na akong ibang hinihiling, kundi matapos na ang lahat ng to.
Itigil ang pang-aabuso sa mga kababaihan. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Bayong! Ate, that's so 1950s!
Kesa naman gumamit ng plastic?
Bakit? It's more convenient kaya.
Pero mas environment friendly ang bayong.
Tulungan nating bawasan ang kalat dulot ng plastic bag at papel. Magdala ng sariling eco bag. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
DZUP Special Features.
So, now allow me the pleasure to introduce our next speaker. We have Dr. Jeanier Arslan. So, he's an honorary Filipino, as it were. So, he's actually Turkish, but from the little research that I've done on him, he stayed here long enough that he actually speaks Tagalog. Is that quite right? Probably not. Probably not. So, anyway, it's an honor to introduce him to you. So he's the president of the Pacific Dialogue Foundation Incorporated. It's a non-profit educational and cultural foundation established by a group of Filipino and Turkish volunteers in 2011, seeking to build and foster relationships between and among people of diverse backgrounds. So here, the great part about this foundation is that it emphasizes the role of the universal values such as tolerance, understanding, compassion, mutual respect, and fairness between and among different religions, even those without religions. So they're active in establishing university dialogues for exchange students and cultural research programs. So he's here to give us a talk about heritage in Turkey amidst terrorism. It's a great honor to have you here, along with the Vice President of the Foundation, Mr. Yavuz Selim-Sirigoglu. So, Dr. Arslan?
Magandang umaga sa inyo lahat. Good morning to each and everyone. It's an honor to be here to speak in front of you. Well, I live here in this country since 2003. And my friends call me as Dr. Hans, since only few people can pronounce my name correctly. That is right. Well, it was the first time I came here, 2003. People were asking me if I knew Yılmaz Bektaş. And I thought he's one of the Turkish living here, whom I haven't met. And later, after searching his name on Google, I realized, and he's that time husband, now ex-husband of Rupa Gutierrez. That's the anecdote I want to share with you. You know, when I say I'm Turkish, most of the people ask me if I know Yılmaz. So, I don't know him. And he's not Prince of Turkey, because there's no king in Turkey. Okay, anyway, today my topic is cultural heritage of Turkey amidst terrorism. Well, I'm not expert on cultural heritage. My expertise more on interfaith and combating extremism, cancer, and this kind of things. So I will try to also tackle a bit about this. I think first I have to mention about the terrorism. What is happening in Turkey? Are we aware of what is happening in Turkey last 3 or 4 years? Maybe some, maybe not. Since 2016 in Turkey, there are a lot of things happened actually, and one of the most important is the coup that happened in Turkey. So this coup was orchestrated by the government itself, by President Erdogan. He's in the power since 2002, already 15 years. And I myself and my friends, who are part of the movement, which is called Hizmet Movement. In English, it is called Service or Gülen Movement, referring to Escala, Fethullah Gülen. all people who are linking to this movement right now by the President Erdogan, linking us to the people who are behind the coup. So it is not true, but I myself and my friends, we cannot travel back to Turkey. They will just, entertain me in jail if I go back. It is unfortunate, we cannot also extend our passports. Can you imagine? So this is happening in Turkey. Besides to that, right now, under the table, Turkish government has been working with ISIS, selling them guns and weapons. So maybe that is why we put here terrorism amidst terrorism in Turkey. So I think within 2 years, more than 16 suicide bombing and explosion happened in different parts of Turkey, including metropolises like Istanbul and Ankara. That is why Turkey, unfortunately, nowadays not so safe as before. Every year, I think before the coup happened, 30 to 35 million tourists visiting Turkey. Now it is decreased 40% just because of the ISIS bombing and government support. You know, these things are really known by the people, especially by the neighboring countries and Europe. Anyway, so throughout the history, archaeological, cultural, religious, and architectural treasures have been the victims of military conflicts. We have a problem since 1980s in the southern part of Turkey. A terrorist group, a guerrilla group called PKK, they are the one fighting against the Turkish government. So that part of Turkey, later I will show the map, it is just in the border of Syria, Iran and Iraq, also very well known Mesopotamia. So it's really a cultural heritage area, and a lot of, you know, monasteries, churches, mosques, and old palaces in that place. So looting happening in that place, not only for the military conflicts, but also, you know, I don't know if there's in the Philippines, in Turkey we have treasure hunters, they have metal detectors, you know, they go to Armenian sacred places or Byzantium, how do you call that, old palaces or old reliefs. So they go there and they use their metal detectors and they are looking for some, you know, valuable items like gold and other things. So that's also another factor I would like to mention to you. Of course, heritage is important because nation building discourses and destruction of heritage hinders the economic reconstruction and recovery of a country. You know, if you want to destroy a country, just touch to their cultural heritage and also try to destroy their language. Then after a few years, I mean, a couple of years, you will see, you know, little things about that nation, maybe. That's really important to protect the cultural heritage. From a realistic point of view, the destruction of cultural heritage is a loss not only for the country where it takes place, but for humanity as a whole. The disappearance of cultural heritage represents a loss for the scientific community of historians, archaeologists, and anthropologists. My family in Turkey live just next to Ephesus, as you know, it is mentioned in Bible, just 40 kilometers. So, you know, you can really feel that Byzantium, you can really feel the other also civilizations live in Turkey when you pass by from those, you know, cultural heritage areas. Turkey is known as cradle of civilizations because in Turkey we call also Turkey as a Minor Asia, or in Turkish, Anadolu, or in English, another term, Anatolia. Anadolu, another meaning, Ana means mother, who means many mothers. So, place of mothers, or Minor Asia, Anatolia, a lot of, you know, civilizations since the beginning, Athians, Hittites, Ural to Phrygia, Lydia, and others, up to Ottoman and Mesopotamia. So those all, you know, very well known, you have been reading in your history, world history books, those civilizations all, you know, part of our history. Today, in Turkey, more than 420 museums with more than 3.5 million relics inside, 1,388 churches. But of course, all those churches are not active today. I think only right now more than 400 churches active in Turkey. And as you know, head part of the Catholics in Rome, but the head part of the Orthodox in Istanbul. Since the beginning, we are still hosting Orthodox brothers and sisters in our country. That's why most of the churches belong to Orthodox Christians, few only Catholics. 17 areas or ruins are specified as World Heritage by UNESCO in different parts of Turkey, like I will show. And there are also a lot of different ethnic groups like Kurds, Kurdish, Georgian, Armenian, Byzantine, Persian, Arab, Assyrian, and many others. They have really a significant population in Turkey. Archaeological and historical heritage sites in Turkey face various problems. Turkish mass media frequently raise two issues. One of them is illicit antiquities trade and destruction of archaeological sites through economic development. You know, if you visit those historical places, you will really see that the first distraction, illicit trade, beautiful mosque, beautiful church, but maybe some parts are already some, how do you call that, tiles, some different designs, mosaics were missing because it's removed. And today, I don't want to say that some countries stole them. Maybe they thought that you Turks, we don't want to know how to protect these things. So I will just take care of them in Paris, in England museums, so you can see some of the items of Turkey. The second one is economic development. Archaeology says through economic development. Well, as mentioned by the keynote speaker, I forgot the doctor's name, in Turkey also we are having this problem through economic development, government is, without thinking twice, destroying very nice, you know, cultural heritage areas in different parts of Turkey, even more than 500 years old, unfortunately. Just recently, in Turkey, you know, all two continents, Asia and Europe. Cross the bridge, you are in Asia. Come back, you are in Europe without visa. Both parts of Turkey. So, government decided to have an underground tunnel under the sea. So, they were able to accomplish within 5 years through a Japanese construction company. But the thing is here, very interesting. During the construction of this tunnel, they realized that there is one of the oldest port in the world they discovered before Jesus, 6,500 years. Can you imagine what happened to this port or the relics from that place they were removed? All, you know, we don't know, all destroyed or all maybe sold out to other places or other countries. Unfortunately, if it would be in another country, they would stop this project, and they would preserve that port. And they were able to find also 36 sink ships in that place. Many, you know, different tiles, mosaics, different things. Even some footprint they were able to notice. Turkish state authorities have attempted in from late autumn period to strictly regulate the movement of archaeological and historical materials of Anatolian origin. I hope it will really continue like that. Yes, these are some of the UNESCO heritage places in Turkey: Alajahir, place of the Hittites; Ephesus, you know, place where I have been living, just 40 kilometers; Çatalhöyük, also before the Christ; Samos and Latin antique cities in Antalya today. And these are the some UNESCO heritage places. And other UNESCO heritage places: Pamukkale, Koton Castle, the Mausoleum of Antiochus, and Diyarbakır Fortress. Unfortunately, this one right now, the one below, is a place of terrorism right now. The terror attacks every day in this place. But, you know, I cannot say 100% that those UNESCO heritage places or other cultural heritage places in Turkey were destroyed completely. No, maybe so far they didn't touch much, but, you know, we are losing every day the culture in our country, and we don't know what the tomorrow will bring, because ISIS is just nearby Turkey. Chaos in Turkey: since Turkey holds a geopolitically important place between Asia, Europe, and Mesopotamia, chaos always part of our history. Because between Asia and Europe, our country is a place of like a channel of passage of heroin, also smuggling area. So that's why the heroin from Middle East goes up to Europe via Turkey. That is why a lot of countries have, you know, not good intention, but bad intention on southern part of Turkey, like Mindanao here in Philippines. Major problems in the last century for ethnic groups, since like 1980s, the terrorist group called PKK, Parti Kargi Kurdistan, in English, Kurdistan Workers Party. So they are working too much to destroy, you know, cultural heritage areas in Turkey. So their intention is, you know, to have an autonomy, but since the conflict began, more than 40,000 people died. So this is the place, just in the border of Syria and Turkey, Iraq and Turkey, Iran and Turkey. So that area is really a conflict zone also. It's a prone to cultural, you know, violent cultural heritage area. So one of the pictures you will see that the women after the, you know, attack, terrorist attack in Kurds inhabited area. So PKK, this group is, they are part of Iraq and Turkey, Kurdistan. So they are also, of course, using this cultural heritage objects, you know, for their funding together with ISIS. But I think ISIS is number one if I say that they are really using a lot of objects to sell, you know, to give the permit to sell, to loot, like those I mentioned. The cultural destruction of ISIS, of course, better than PKK, fits to this pattern, iconoclasm, because their ideology, their radical form of Islamic ideology, Salafism, they are just, you know, trying to destroy all the cultural heritage. According to this radical Islamic ideology, you shouldn't have any, you know, graveyard. There shouldn't be nothing above the ground. Everything should be under. So that's why they are destroying the tombs, stones, graveyards, anything. So anything to respect, they want to destroy. So that's another problem right now we are facing in Middle East. Since summer 2014, ISIS smashed artifacts in museums, stone shrines, tombs in different parts of Middle East, and also they did some attack to Turkey through pillaging and trafficking stone artifacts to finance their activities. Erin Thompson from University of Toronto speaks and bureaucracy of looting. It's a nice strategy implemented, I mean, not nice, but, you know, I call it them, implemented by ISIS, whose fighters wouldn't do the looting themselves, but issue license and collect tax on the product of the excavations. So ISIS caused explosions in Turkey to create chaos. Three of them directly targeted the historical relics during the touristic season. This is very famous Sultan Ahmed or Blue Mosque. So just the explosion happened in front of Blue Mosque. So ISIS claimed this attack good now much harm happened to the mosque. It's maybe more than 300 years old mosque. Another one is the world's biggest and the oldest market or bazaar, Grand Bazaar. So I think yearly more than 90 million people visiting this bazaar itself, both Turkish and the foreigners. There was another explosion, but this time PKK claimed the attack. So good also, not much harm, but well, we are still afraid. So this one is PKK prone area in the border of Syria. December 8, 2015, PKK put a 500 years old mosque on fire during a clash with Turkish army. The mosque was under UNESCO heritage list. So, and the mosque inside, what happened? The very famous chandeliers were destroyed. And last part, I will finish with this. Zilma case, it's very famous also, the mosaics endangered after a dam constructed in Turkey, in the southern part of Turkey. And Zilma was a Hellenistic and Roman city originally established in the 3rd century BC. The mosaics recognizes one of the world's greatest Roman mosaic collections, both in size and quality. After the construction of Pelagic Dam, started in 1996, archaeologists from Gaziantep, southern part of Turkey city, Şanlıurfa also, museums and foreign archaeologists conducted rescue excavations until 2000, when part of the site was submerged. So, archaeologists report that many of the mosaics discovered from Zeugma were damaged by looting. So I will just show the picture also. You see the mosaic depicting the wedding of Dionysus and Ariadne, stole part of which Dionysus' wedding scene. Today we can only show it via laser technology because the rest was stolen by someone, we don't know who. And this is also a famous gypsy girl. So, as you see, the picture is missing also, the whole picture. Some part already, unfortunately, stolen. Yes. This is a detailed one. And Assyrians, they are one of the oldest communities in the Middle East, where they have lived for millennia. Last 100 years, successive wars have forced many to leave the region. Today, they live in some part of Turkey, like 10 to 15,000 people only in Turkey, the rest or left Turkey, some in 1990, some before, right, before Second World War. This is the their cultural heritage area. After our former Prime Minister's initiation, they came back again, some of them. They are right now trying to protect their community. Their language is Aramaic, one of those oldest language, and scriptures also written in the letters of its ancient alphabet. And some of them, this guy, he's not a Muslim, but he's a Christian, Assyrian, and a couple also. So they are trying to protect their language and the culture. Thank you very much, Maram Salam.
Napahinggan natin ng mga pag-aaral ni na Dr. Honey Libertine Atranzar Labor ng UP Manila College of Arts and Sciences, Dr. Jared Lico ng UP College of Architecture at si Yanghir Arslan ng Pacific Dialogue Foundation sa Idinao sa The Lost and the Retrieved, Built Cultural Heritage Amidst Conflict dito sa DZUP Special Features. Hinandog ito sa atin ng UP Manila Philippine Arts Program. Maraming salamat mga kasali. Like our Facebook page at DZUP 1602 AM and at DZUP Specials. Abangan ang susunod na mga episode ng DZUP Special Features from Tuesday to Friday 9 to 10 AM. Do you have events you want to be covered by UP Diliman's official radio station? Send your proposals to dzup.marketing@gmail.com. Ako si Gian Librojo, magandang umaga.